minutes of the argument, is that? And then Ms. Sedfeld, is that correct? And you're going to take the last 5 minutes, is that correct? Good, and who's going to take rebuttal, if any, or are you going to ask for rebuttal? Very good, appreciate that. And Mr. Eckel, good morning to you. Do any council have further questions? You understand you've got to keep track of the 7 minutes and the 5 minutes. Very good. With that, Ms. Oval, you may approach and you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Casey Oval, and as we just went over, I'm planning on addressing our first assignment of error in this case today. On behalf of the appellant, Teresa Holcomb, regarding the jury trial right, Ms. Sedfeld will address our remaining two assignments of error regarding the issuance of the writ and the failure to set a bond in this case. Your Honors, if in any action seeking a writ of restitution in 1875, parties to that action had the right of a trial by jury, and the Nebraska Constitution requires that the same happen, that the same right be allowed today. The appellee and the Attorney General in this case asked this court to disregard nearly 150 years of precedent and adopt a new exception to the jury trial guarantee. But our client is entitled to a jury trial in this matter because the right was statutorily granted in 1875, because the action here is an action at law, and because...
Before we get too far into the merits, what remedy do you seek in this appeal? I mean, I understand from the record it appears Ms. Holcomb, the writ of restitution was issued and served, and she was removed from the premises at issue. What are you asking us to do in this appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. If you agree with us on the bond and the writ issues, our second and third assignments of error, we ask that this court dismiss the case, remand with its instructions to dismiss due to the fact that Ms. Holcomb has been displaced from the unit already, or alternatively to order Ms. Holcomb to be returned to that unit or a similar unit. And then with regard to our first assignment of error, the remedy that we are seeking is a trial by jury, right?
And what would possibly happen at the end of such a trial?
Well, if Ms. Holcomb is returned to unit, we would have a trial. We would be able to ascertain whether or not there was sufficient conduct to terminate the lease.
And if she prevails, she's asking to be returned to the unit?
Yes, Your Honor, yes. The third reason our client is entitled to a trial by jury here is because the issue or the inquiry into special or summary proceedings is ultimately irrelevant. And I want to start with that point. This court has never held that there is no right to a trial by jury in special or summary proceedings, and that there's no need to do so today. For that issue, to be an inquiry of issue here, this court would need to find that the underlying action, which is under the Uniform Residential Landlord Tenant Act, this court would need to find that it's a summary proceeding. And this court
the language that you're talking about, doesn't that come from one of our cases?
Yes, Your Honor, this court has described forcible entry and detainer actions and actions under the Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act as special statutory creations that are designed to summarily decide issues regarding the immediate right of possession. Forcible entry and detainer and an action under the Uniform Residential Landlord Tenant Act are designed to be faster methods of ejectment. And I believe that this court's language regarding, regarding special or summary proceedings is language describing that faster nature, a faster method of ejectment.
And we've used that language in previous cases.
You have,
maybe
Your Honor.
I misunderstood your
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't mean to interrupt. I believe that the language that you use in those previous cases is designed to, is a descriptor of the speedy nature of it, but not a descriptor of the underlying character of the action, be it an action or a special proceeding.
There's some reference in the Moores case that I believe your opposing counsel relies upon that talks about summary proceedings with respect, how the jury trial right applies or doesn't apply in summary proceedings, correct?
There is, Your Honor. That language comes from a very lengthy quote from a case out of the Supreme Court of Arkansas. So it's found, this court has never held that in particular. It's found in the middle of a very lengthy quote.
Where your position is it's dicta, or maybe
Or maybe less, Your Honor, because it's
less than dicta?
it's just in the middle of a very long quote, Your Honor, discussing what actions had a right to a trial by jury at common law from the Supreme Court of Arkansas. And even after reviewing that quote from the Supreme Court of Arkansas, this court said that it's better to rely on principles of law, something like that. I don't remember the exact language, but rather than the uncertain teachings of the common law. So the court does this lengthy examination of whether there's a jury trial right in quo warranto proceedings for that case in State v. Moores, and then goes on to say, but we should really decide this case based on fixed principles rather than because there's so much uncertainty as to what existed at common law.
I'm still trying to my head around the notion that we could restore the status quo ante, which isn't there a distinction between the right to possession and the contractual relationship that previously existed between your client and the opposing party?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Your Honor. Is there a distinction between...
In the summary proceedings, they're trying only the right to immediate possession. They're not trying anything else. Isn't that true?
That's true, Your Honor, but I believe it's related to the contractual relationship, because it says that the contractual relationship has ended, and therefore the landlord is entitled to possession.
So if there is an erroneous dispossession, the contractual relationship still exists despite this intervening period of time?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I'm not sure.
I guess what I'm looking at is almost sort of a mootness inquiry at this point, and which may lead to the part that your colleague is going to discuss about the supersedious, but where there hasn't been a supersedious or a mandamus to require supersedious, how do we avoid a mootness analysis?
Your Honor, I will let my colleague address the bond and the restitution, but I would like to say quickly and briefly before I sit down that this case isn't moot. It is very much affecting our client right now, the judgment of an eviction. So we would argue that this case is not moot. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Sedfeld, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the Court. My name is Caitlin Sedfeld, and I am arguing the second and third assignments of error pertaining to the issuance of the writ of restitution. Issuing a writ of restitution when the tenant has appealed and requested to pay a bond and to stay that writ is an error, as is issuing a writ of restitution without notice to the tenant. Before I get into it, I do want to address the mootness question as well. I would say that it's an issue that's capable of repeating, and it does repeat every time an eviction case is appealed.
That's an argument that it may be moot, but we should address it, correct? It doesn't. I mean, there are cases in which we would say a case is moot, but we will nonetheless address the issue under either the public interest exception or whether it, as you say, is capable of repetition and evades review. But do you have an argument as to the mootness question, whether we can grant adequate relief in this case?
So eviction judgments, as my co-counsel said, do affect tenants long after, which is why it's a common practice in eviction court to vacate judgments after. That's a remedy that's often used. I think that's a little bit analogous to the remedy we're asking for here.
You're not asking to be repossessed?
We are asking to be repossessed, depending on what this court does with the first assignment of error relating to the jury trial.
Was the issuance of the a failure to issue a supersedious, is that a ministerial act?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Assume that it is. Is mandamus the remedy?
I am not sure, Your Honor, admittedly. I do know, though, how it works with a tenant when a bond has not been issued, which is what happened in this case. In this case, the tenant filed her notice of appeal on June 22, 2021. For no reason that we can figure out or that's in the record, the court didn't process her bond until August 3, 2021.
And what's the time difference there?
It's 42 days. Whereas the landlord filed for a precipice for a writ of restitution. And it might help to understand that the writ of restitution is what sends the sheriff or constable out to physically remove the tenant from their home. That was processed from July 27th. It was filed July 28th. It was signed by the court July 29th of 2021. The tenant was served with it, Ms. Holcomb.
Does the motion to set bond need to be set for hearing? Are there any local rules that require that?
There is not, Your Honor. There's no local rule. Typically, they're ruled on similar to the way that an IFP is ruled on, which is sort of ex parte, at least in Douglas County.
And was notice given to the other side?
Yes.
Pursuant to a certificate of service or something?
Yes. It's also worth noting that Ms. Holcomb did not receive, which is the third assignment of error, any notice of the precipice for the writ or the writ of restitution. She found out about it when she was served on July 29th.
Is there any statutory requirement that such notice be provided?
There is not, Your Honor, but I don't think that precipices for writs are any different than any other type of filing on a case that that the litigants would all receive notice of. Writs are not special. There's no reason that the tenant should not have received notice of it.
She would have already known the court's ruling on the possession action, correct? She just didn't know that the writ, she didn't receive notice that the writ had been issued.
Yes, Your Honor. She knew that, obviously, that she had been evicted on June 9th of 2021, but she also knew that on June 22nd, 2021, that she had filed a notice of appeal and a motion to set the bond at the same time.
And the court's original order set the writ could not issue for 30 days, as I recall. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
So for the press fee, then, that was after the 30 days?
It was, Your Honor. So all this happened, even though she had filed a notice of appeal and asked for a bond. The end result of the court arbitrarily not setting the bond when she requested.
The court did set a bond.
It did eventually set a bond.
After the writ was served.
Yes.
So does that have any effect at that point?
At that point, it's too late. She's out of her home at that point. And evictions, appellee may argue this is more than just a matter of damages, right? It's being removed from your home is a disruption to your life that a lot of people can't recover from. So I'd conclude by saying that although Ms. Holcomb had clearly availed herself to the litigation by demanding a jury trial, trying the case, and appealing the adverse order, she was not given notice and therefore could not contest the writ to remove her home. Had she been able to gotten notice of the precipice, maybe she would have been able to stop that. And so we ask that the court reverse and remand with instructions to dismiss or alternately to retry the case below and permit Ms. Holcomb to move back into her unit or similar unit during further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Eckel, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Gene Eckel. appearing on behalf of the appellee, MP Dodge Management Company. As the court's aware, there are three main issues before the court today. First would be whether the right to a jury trial, protected by Article 1, Section 6 of the Nebraska Constitution, attaches to restitution actions under Nebraska Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act. Two, whether Nebraska Revised Statute Section 76-1447 requires a tenant to deposit with the court a judgment in costs or a surety bond before the execution of the writ of restitution can be stayed. And three, whether Nebraska Revised Statute Section 76-1446 requires notice to be given to a defendant when the precedent for writ of restitution has been filed. It is our argument that a right of jury trial set forth in Article 1, Section 6 of the Nebraska Constitution does not attach to restitution actions because it does fall under one of the three exceptions to the constitutional right to a jury trial, as this court noted in State v. Moores. And as this court is aware of the right in that case, that court said that the right to a jury trial did not extend to equitable actions, admiralty, or summary proceedings. And we believe that a restitution action is a summary proceeding.
Where does that come from, those three elements?
Your Honor,
common law, or where does it come from?
Your Honor, and as prior counsel mentioned, that was a quote from an Arkansas case. And this is, of course, this is a case from 1898. But this court did refer to it again recently in the
130. Well, in common law, equitable actions were never tried to a jury. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, Your Honor. That is correct. And there, as this court indicated in 132 Ventures LLC versus Active Spine Physical Therapy LLC, this court then again cited or mentioned State v. Morris in that case. And in 132 Ventures LLC, this court held that a forced entry detainer action is a special statutory proceeding designed to provide a speedy and summary remedy. We believe that restitution actions follow almost identical, the same speedy procedures that you do in a forcible entry detainer action.
There's a jury trial right in forcible entry and detainer actions, isn't there?
The legislature did allow under the forcible entry detainer statutes to give the option whether you can have a bench trial or a jury trial.
Hasn't that been in the forcible entry and detainer statute since 1875?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor, because I don't know when the forcible entry and detainer statutes had been amended over the years since that time, but that would be almost a legislative creature that the legislature decided at whatever point that we are going to establish that for forcible entry and detainer, we're going to allow it to be either a bench trial or a jury trial.
Isn't it equally plausible that the legislature in 1875 believed that a jury trial was a constitutional requirement and therefore included the possibility of that in the statute?
It's possible. But then we have to go forward to 1974 when Nebraska adopted the Uniform Residential Landlord Tenant Act, which was not in statute or in common law at the time that the Constitution of Nebraska was adopted.
So when the Uniform Act was adopted, it didn't preclude jury trials, did it? Or did the legislature change that later on?
In 1995, the legislature did remove, I believe, the jury trial.
So is there any significance to that?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because at the time that if you look at the legislative history, Senator Christensen, who was the proponent of that legislation, indicated, here's the reason why we're going to remove this jury trial from the statute for the Landlord-Tenant Act. One, and he specifically noted, is because we need to have a speedy summary remedy that's going to be available. And they mentioned that when you throw in having a jury trial, that takes that out because it's no longer going to be speedy remedy. You're going to have
What if the legislature decides that breach of contract and tort actions just take too darn long, mm-hmm. and we need to speed these up? And so they pass the Breach of Contract and Tort Law Summary Proceeding Act, and they speed up all the timelines, get these done.
Mm-hmm.
Can they then call that a summary proceeding and take away the jury trial right for those types of actions?
I don't think they could, because those are legal actions. And special statutory proceedings falls into a small category.
So what defines it? Help us out. Help us understand what makes something a special statutory proceeding not subject to the jury trial guarantee.
I've been trying to figure that out myself, but typically what I want to say is this. It's up to this court that really makes that determination.
And we're looking for help.
Well, in this case, I think because this court has already deemed that forcible entry detainer actions are special statutory procedures, summary proceedings, and the restitution actions fall in line with what forcible entry detainer actions are.
We've never said, have we, that there is no jury trial right in a forcible entry and detainer action?
No, but this court did indicate in the 132 Ventures LLC case that the legislature decided to allow that to be an option. Where
was the issue of constitutionality present in that case?
It was discussed at that time, but I believe this court...
And in that case, wasn't possessory interest tried to the bench by agreement of the parties, or at least not before us on appeal?
The only
issue before us on appeal was the issue of damages?
I think on appeal, also, there was the issue of whether they waived their right to a jury trial.
That's the issue of damages, not to the possession.
Correct.
So, really, that case is distinguishable from this case, isn't it?
Distinguishable as far as the facts on that case, but not distinguishable on the issue that this court has, again, held that forcible entry detainer proceedings are summary proceedings, which would then...
What is this? What's the definition of a summary proceeding?
A summary proceeding is typically going to be a proceeding that could be a non-jury proceeding.
Isn't that entirely circular then? I mean, if summary proceedings are non-jury and non-juries are summary, how do we get out of the circle?
Well, by definition, a summary proceeding is a non-jury proceeding that settles a controversy or disposes of a controversy or disposes of a case in a relatively prompt and simple manner.
An expedited procedure, expedited filing and answers and service and those types of things.
Correct, because that is why it is a summary proceeding. It's fast. It's
that, that, that
all
gets
of
back
this
to
goes
my...
back to the Arkansas case. I beg your pardon.
No,
well, it does. But this court, when it noted that in this case, constitutes a right to a jury trial, there are exceptions, and these are one of the three exceptions. And you're going to have your equitable remedies, your admiralty, and your summary proceeding.
Back to the Arkansas, whatever, 1898.
That's correct.
Is a landlord or tenant equitable or a law action?
It would not be an equitable action, no.
And you said it's a law action?
It's an action. It's a legal action. But this court, in our argument, is that it is a summary proceeding. It's a special statutory proceeding, just like this court held in 132 Ventures.
So it's not equitable. It's not admirable. It's purely a special proceeding.
That's our argument. And this court pointed out with forcible entry detainer.
So it appears, and maybe I'm wrong, that different states have taken different positions on this, and some have said that it is unconstitutional to not allow jury trials under the Uniform Eviction Act or something similar, and others have said otherwise. Are you familiar with those cases, and do some help us more than others?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with all those cases. I do just know that the states of New Hampshire, Hawaii, Idaho, New Mexico, Arkansas, and Louisiana have held that a jury trial does not extend to summary proceedings. And
summary proceedings in general or summary actions under the Uniform Residential Landlord Tenant Act?
I think it would be summary proceedings in general, Your Honor, but again, if you look at the forcible entry detainer statutes and you look at the procedures for restitution actions on the Uniform Residential Landlord Tenant Act, they're identical as far as the issuance of when the summons needs to be issued. The summons has to be issued within 3 days from the date of issuance and returnable to the court within 5 days from the date of issuance, and the court trial has to be given no less than 10 and no more than 14 days from the date of the
This court has held that the jury trial guarantee in the state constitution guarantees a right to a jury trial in actions that you are entitled to a jury under either common law or statute as it existed in 1875. Do you agree with that?
I do. And
if it's correct that forcible entry and detainer actions, there was a forcible entry and detainer statute in effect in 1875 that guaranteed a right to a jury trial, and you're also arguing that the NURLTA is essentially identical to the forcible entry and detainer action, why does it not follow that there would also be a jury trial right in a possession action under the NURLTA?
Our argument is that the procedures under the Landlord-Tenant Act are identical to the procedures under enforcement detainer as far as how fast you have to serve a summons, how fast you have to have a trial before the court.
Is the right that's being enforced and the remedy that's being obtained also the same in those two types of proceedings?
As far as possession?
The right being possession of the premises and the remedy being restitution of the premises.
Similar, yes, although the Landlord-Tenant Act is obviously, the Landlord-Tenant Act addresses other issues that the Fourth Amendment detainer statutes do not, as far as tenant's conduct, what the landlord needs to provide, what the tenant needs to do. And so you have to also look at the time that the Constitution was adopted in 1875, there was no uniform Landlord-Tenant Act in existence.
Or anything similar to it.
Nothing similar to that because, again, all the Landlord-Tenant Act does is it focuses on a relationship on residential property and the relationship between the tenant and the landlord. So, and that wasn't in existence at the time that the
it sets forth duties and responsibilities of landlords and tenants.
Correct.
And that's what's different than a forcible entry and detainer action.
Correct. Forcible entry and detainer is going to be an action where, let's say, someone's squatting. Or a lot of times it's used for commercial cases where there's a commercial eviction.
Are there contracts implied?
For
landlord-tenant relationships under the Uniform Act?
It could be whether there's a written or unwritten. So there could be an oral rental agreement or unwritten agreement. Yes, it would apply to those, but it has to be a residential.
It's limited to residential relationship. Okay, and it's either contractual or implied contract?
You can do an implied in fact contract. For example, if someone says, well, I agree to pay this much money orally, and they move in and they pay
that much more. They have a lease and they're a holdover, and under the law there's some stuff about what that means, right?
That the Landlord-Tenant Act addresses if you're a holdover a tenant, yes.
Right. Is that a contractual relationship that's on deck then?
That would be a contractual relationship.
Before your time completely expires, would you address the sequence of the actual dispossession of the tenant in this case?
Yes. June 9th of 2021 is when the court granted restitution to MP Dodge. But the court also ruled that the writ of restitution could not be issued by the court until July 9th of 2021.
Was that done by agreement?
No. The court on its own stated that the writ could not be issued by the court for 30 days, which would have been July 9th of 2021. June 22nd of 2021 is when Ms. Holcomb filed her notice of appeal, but she also filed her ex parte motion for appeal bond and stay of writ of restitution on that same date. But she took no further actions after that. She did not take any further action to file an appeal bond. She took no further action to inquire with the court about the status of the motion. There was no hearing set for the motion. Not until A.B. Dodge filed this precipice for writ of restitution on July 27th, 2021. And after the writ was executed, that's when Ms. Holcomb went back to the court and asked and paid for the supersedious bond.
So your argument, I take it, is that during that approximately 30-day window, that was her opportunity to come forward with a bond, or at least come forward and say, Judge, set the bond so I can do it. And once the time went by, your client was free to proceed with the eviction.
She had plenty of time. I do want to point out, though, real quick, because of the nature of this case, and Ms. Holcomb was evicted for threatening to harm other residents, A.B. Dodge felt that it has a reasonable duty of reasonable care to its tenants, as this court's held in Peterson versus Kings of Gate Partners. And it felt that it had to do something. It had waited and waited and waited. There was no appeal bond made. There was absolutely no effort made by Ms. Holcomb. And A.B. Dodge felt that it had to do something to help his other residents, especially the two residents that were still remaining there that had been threatened, to move forward with restitution.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, I would just ask the court to affirm the district court's ruling and may be excused.
Thank you very much. You best not be excused quite yet.
Thank you.
Take your seat at counsel. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
2 minutes.
Ms. Ogle.
Again, good morning, and you've got 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to return to the question of the remedy, the question of the remedy and the mootness here. Justice Castle, you asked about mandamus action and whether that would be an appropriate remedy for the failure to set a bond.
Or it would have been at some point in time.
I think in this particular action, it would be really difficult to rely on mandamus to be the remedy here, because the statutory scheme is that the writ can issue the same day. In this particular case, it didn't issue on the same day, but often writs, or we
the
know
writs of restitution.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not writs of mandamus.
No, I'm sorry. Writs of restitution.
Yes. Which writs you're talking about.
Yes, writs of restitution can issue on the same day, and then the statute requires that they be executed within 10 days. So it's a very short time frame in which would have to ask the court to set a bond and then feel that there's sufficient enough time has passed to file a mandamus action to ask.
Could be a short period of time. Here it was, what, 30 days?
It was 30 days, Your Honor, yes.
And during that 30 days, it's been represented to us that there was no action taken to come to court and say, Judge, I need that supersedious so I can get that posted?
I don't believe that that's the case, Your Honor. We asked for the bond to be set. I believe we called the court and asked for the bond to be set.
Is that in our record?
It is not in the record, Your Honor. It's a phone call to the clerk. And
what's the typical process? Is there usually a hearing on a motion to set a supersedious, or is it something that the court just does?
I believe there is.
I just don't know.
Isn't the amount set by statute? Isn't it based on the rental value?
Partially, Your Honor, but there is the judge has to set an initial bond amount, and then the tenant is required to pay into the court the amount of monthly rent thereafter. On top of the bond. And the court, and Ms. Holcomb could not pay a bond that she doesn't know the amount to pay. So the bond has to be set in order for us to pay it and then continue to pay monthly rent into the
court. And this is county court, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So mandamus would have run from the district court to the county court to set a supersedious bond had a timely mandamus been sought.
Potentially, Your Honor, but again, it's such a short timeline in eviction cases because it's designed to be. And that to ask for mandamus here would be really difficult. I'm sorry, I see I'm out of time. I should have asked if I could continue.
You may continue.
I'll stop there for now unless there are other questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Council, that concludes arguments in MP Dodge Management Company versus Holcomb. So you are excused, and the court is adjourned.